Welcome to a deep dive into, politics and economics. It's a wild world out there. You guys have sent us a pretty interesting mix of sources this time, covering like quirky political debates, but also some serious economic concerns, like a potential debt crisis. It's going to be quite a ride.
Yeah, it's fascinating how seemingly small things like time zones or people moving across state lines can have huge consequences for the country's political and economic future. It's all connected.
Okay, so speaking of time zones, let's unpack this whole daylight saving time thing. It's a lot more complicated than people think, right? It's not just like a left versus right issue.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. One of the articles pointed out the impact of geography. For example, Bangor, Maine, and in Indianapolis, Indiana, are both in the Eastern time zone. But in December, sunrise in Bangor is almost an hour earlier than in Indianapolis. So if we switch to permanent standard time, kids in Bangor would go to school in daylight, but kids in Indianapolis would be starting their day in the dark.
Oh, wow, I hadn't thought about it like that. So, no matter what decision is made on daylight saving time, someone's going to be unhappy. No wonder Trump's hesitant to pick a side.
Exactly. You know, this whole time zone thing might seem minor, but it actually touches on bigger questions about federalism and how policies can have vastly different impacts depending on where you live. Like what works in one place might not work in another.
And speaking of geographic shifts, we also have these sources about people moving from blue states to redder states. What's driving this trend, and what are the consequences?
Well, the numbers are pretty striking. States like New York, Illinois, and California, they're losing a lot of residents. Many of them are going to Texas, Florida, and Arizona. And one article suggests that it's partly because of the rising cost of living in blue states.
So it's kind of like people are voting with their feet, looking for more affordable places to live. What does that mean for the future of those states, especially when it comes to elections?
Well, yeah. When states lose population, they lose representation in Congress and electoral votes. And this could shift the balance of power in future presidential elections, potentially giving Republicans an advantage.
I see. So it's a political issue as well as an economic one?
Exactly. And one article talks about Ezra Klein's idea of a politics of abundance. He argues that instead of focusing on redistributing existing resources, Democrats need to make their states more affordable, create more opportunities so people don't feel like they have to leave.
That's a really interesting idea. But one article also pointed out that some policies that are meant to make those states more equitable might be contributing to the affordability problem.
Right. The article used the example of extensive building codes, which are important for accessibility but can also drive up the cost of housing. And another example was California's high-speed rail project, which has been delayed and gone way over budget because of all the complex regulations.
So it's a balancing act. We want a more inclusive and sustainable society, but we also have to make sure those policies don't unintentionally make things less affordable.
Yeah, it's a complex issue with no easy solutions.
And it reminds me of another hot button issue, voter ID laws. One of the articles was about Indiana's recent move to ban student IDs for voting.
Yeah, this is a controversial one with strong opinions on both sides. Opponents argue that these laws disproportionately affect young voters and minorities who are less likely to have government-issued photo IDs. They see it as a way to suppress voter turnout among groups that tend to lean Democrat.
But supporters of these laws argue that they're necessary to prevent voter fraud, right?
Right. They frame it as a matter of election integrity. But studies have shown that voter fraud is extremely rare. And there's really no evidence to suggest that student IDs are any more susceptible to fraud than other forms of identification.
So is it really about preventing fraud, or is it about gaining a political advantage? It seems like there's always more to the story than meets the eye.
Well, it's important to consider the potential motivations and consequences of these policies, especially when they target specific groups. It raises questions about fairness and equal access to the ballot box.
Speaking of political maneuvering, let's talk about Trump's immigration policies. He's facing pushback from some surprising places, even within his own party. What's going on?
One of the sources focused on Trump's plan to deport Ukrainian refugees. And this has sparked criticism from some Republican senators like Lindsey Graham and Mike Rounds, who usually support his stance on immigration.
It's interesting to see this kind of division within the Republican Party. What do you think is behind this specific pushback?
It's hard to say for sure. Some people think it's because of humanitarian concerns, especially considering the ongoing war in Ukraine. Others suggest it might be more about political strategy, because some Republicans are worried about alienating moderate voters if they deport Ukrainian refugees.
So even within one political party, there can be a whole range of views on a single issue. It seems like Trump just can't please everyone, no matter what he does.
It definitely highlights the complexities of immigration policy. It's tough to balance things like humanitarian concerns with national security interests. It also shows us the shifting dynamics within the Republican Party as different groups are trying to gain influence.
Okay, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about what's happening in Trump world. It seems like some of his own appointees are getting criticized. Even Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett isn't immune.
Yeah, it's fascinating because they're not criticizing her conservative stance. What they're upset about is that she doesn't always seem completely loyal to Trump. Some of his supporters are unhappy that she doesn't always vote in a way that directly benefits him, even on Supreme Court cases.
So it's not enough that she's a conservative justice. They want her to be a Trump loyalist first and foremost. That seems a little worrisome.
It definitely raises questions about the politicization of the judiciary. Are judges being pressured to rule in a way that's politically expedient rather than based on legal principles? Some legal scholars see this as a threat to the independence of the courts, which is a crucial part of a functioning democracy.
It seems like a slippery slope.
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
And Barrett's not the only one feeling the heat. Senator Tom Tillis, who's a Republican from North Carolina, is also facing backlash from Trump's supporters. What did he do?
Well, apparently his approval rating is pretty low, and he's been willing to push back against some of Trump's advisors. Some articles suggest that Trump might even endorse a primary challenger in the 2026 Senate race, which would make it a lot harder for Tillis to get reelected.
So even if you're a well-established Republican, you're not safe if you don't always agree with Trump. That says a lot about the power dynamics within the party. It seems like loyalty to Trump is the most important thing.
It shows how fragile the Republican Party's unity really is. Even perceived disloyalty to Trump, even on small things, can have serious consequences.
Okay, so speaking of elections, the DCCC has put out a list of incumbent Democrats they think are vulnerable in the 2026 House races. What are they looking at? And what does this tell us about their plan to keep their majority in the House?
The list includes Democrats who won by really small margins in 2024, as well as those representing districts that are pretty evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. And it also includes newly elected members who haven't had much time to establish themselves.
So they're not taking anything for granted.
Nope. It seems like they're focusing their efforts on getting more support in those swing districts.
They're definitely gearing up for a fight.
They know they're going to have to work hard to keep control of the House.
And now for the big one. The looming debt crisis. You mentioned it earlier, and it seems like this is something that could have a major impact on everyone, regardless of their political views.
Absolutely. This goes beyond partisan politics. And the sources we've looked at paint a pretty concerning picture of what could happen to the economy if we don't address it soon.
Okay, let's break it down. What exactly is causing this debt crisis, and what could happen if it gets out of control?
One of the biggest contributors is the proposal to extend tax cuts without making any changes to spending. The CRFB estimates that this could add between $5 trillion and $11.2 trillion to the national debt over the next 10 years.
Wow. Those numbers are huge. What would that much debt mean for everyday Americans?
Well, it could mean higher interest rates on things like mortgages, car loans, and credit cards. It could also lead to inflation, which would make everything we buy more expensive. And in the long run, it could slow down economic growth, leading to fewer jobs and lower wages.
So it's not just some abstract economic thing. It would affect everyone's wallets.
Exactly. And it's not just the size of the debt. It's also about how we're dealing with it. One of the articles was really critical of what it called fake math in Washington budgeting. They're talking about how politicians rely on super optimistic economic projections to justify things like those tax cuts.
So they're basically just hoping that everything will magically work out.
Yeah, kind of. But the problem is that those projections are often way too optimistic. And things usually don't turn out as well as they hope. Independent analyses from groups like the CBO and the JCT suggest that those projections probably won't happen. So we might be in for a rude awakening.
This is starting to sound pretty bad. Are there any solutions? What can we do to get this debt crisis under control before it's too late?
Well, some experts are suggesting that we should embrace new technologies like AI. They argue that AI could help boost productivity and economic growth, which would lead to more tax revenue. Another idea is to focus on attracting skilled immigrants who could contribute to our workforce and help drive innovation.
Those sound like good ideas, but I'm sure there are challenges with each of those approaches too.
Of course. For example, with AI, some people are worried about jobs being replaced by machines. And we need to make sure that everyone benefits from AI, not just a small group of people. And with immigration, there are always discussions about balancing economic needs with security concerns and the impact on social services.
It seems like any solution is going to involve tough choices and trade-offs.
That's the nature of complex problems. There are rarely simple solutions. We'll have to see how this all plays out.
Okay, I think that's a good place to pause for now. This is a lot to digest.
It's interesting how all these economic issues are often connected to how our political system works. And speaking of which, one of the sources takes us inside Congress, and well, it's pretty unsettling.
Oh, yeah. This was the one with all the anonymous interviews with members of Congress, right? They were basically talking about all the crazy stuff happening behind the scenes.
Yeah. And it goes beyond the usual partisan gridlock. Some of these interviews suggest that there are serious issues, like substance abuse, members showing up to vote drunk or high, and even concerns about some members' mental competence.
I remember that quote from Representative Jim Hines. He said, "There's no question that somewhere between 6 and 12 of my colleagues are at a point where I think they don't have the faculties to do their job." It's pretty shocking that a sitting member of Congress would say something like that.
Yeah. It makes you wonder how well our legislative branch is really functioning. If elected officials are questioning whether their colleagues are even capable of doing their jobs, it suggests a level of dysfunction that goes way beyond just political disagreements.
And it's not just personal problems either. The article also talked about how gerrymandering has created a system where a lot of members are more worried about being challenged in a primary by someone more extreme in their own party than they are about losing in the general election.
That's a huge problem. It discourages compromise and bipartisanship. Politicians are basically rewarded for catering to the most extreme views in their party, which makes it almost impossible to find common ground and actually get things done.
So how do we fix it? Is there any way to break out of this cycle of gridlock and dysfunction? The article mentioned a few possible reforms, like multi-member districts with ranked choice voting. Could that work?
Those are definitely ideas worth looking into. Multi-member districts could make elections more competitive and encourage candidates to appeal to a wider range of voters. And ranked choice voting could also help more moderate candidates by letting voters rank their choices so they don't have to worry about splitting the vote.
But like any major political reform, there will be obstacles. I mean, who's going to push for these changes when the people who benefit from the current system are the ones who have to vote for reform? It seems like a no-win situation.
You're right. It would take a massive public push to overcome the resistance from those who benefit from the way things are now. But it's not impossible. Public awareness and engagement can be really powerful forces for change.
Okay, let's move on to another story that caught my attention. The corruption case against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. This one's got a lot of twists and turns.
It sure does. Apparently, the Department of Justice was willing to drop the case if Adams would help them round up immigrants. But the judge in the case wasn't happy about that idea. He even brought in a special attorney, Paul Clement, who was the Solicitor General under George W. Bush, to advise him.
Yeah, and Clement recommended that the judge should dismiss the case with prejudice, meaning Adams can't be charged again, even if he doesn't keep his end of the bargain. That's pretty unusual.
It is. Clement's argument was that protecting the integrity of the justice system is more important than potentially punishing someone who might be corrupt. He said that letting the Department of Justice use the threat of prosecution to pressure an elected official would set a dangerous precedent.
So the judge is basically trying to uphold the principle of fairness, even though it could mean that someone who might be guilty of corruption gets off scot-free. It's a tough situation with no easy answers.
It brings up important questions about prosecutorial discretion, the separation of powers, and whether the justice system can be abused. It's a reminder that pursuing justice isn't always straightforward, and sometimes we have to make really difficult decisions.
And just to add another layer of complexity to this whole thing, former Governor Andrew Cuomo is apparently planning a political comeback and is already trying to get support from Adams's base in Brooklyn. Talk about throwing a wrench in the works.
This is going to make the next election really interesting. Adams is already facing an uphill battle to get reelected, and now Cuomo is jumping into the race. It's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out.
It's like a political drama unfolding in real time.
But it's important to remember that these political battles have real-world consequences for everyone.
Yeah, they're not just games. The decisions these politicians make directly affect people's access to healthcare, the quality of education, the state of the economy, and so much more. Okay, before we move on to the last part of our deep dive, what are some key takeaways so far?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that all of these seemingly unrelated issues are actually connected, whether it's time zones, migration, voter ID laws, corruption scandals, or just a broken political system, they're all part of the same big picture. They all influence each other in ways that we might not even realize.
It's a good reminder that we can't look at these things in isolation. We need to understand the bigger context to really make sense of what's going on.
Exactly. And that brings us to another key takeaway. Critical thinking is essential. The stuff we've talked about today is complex and nuanced and often contradictory. It's not about just accepting what people tell you. It's about engaging with the information, questioning assumptions, and coming to your own conclusions.
That's exactly what these deep dives are all about. We're not here to tell you what to think. We want to give you the tools and information you need to think critically and engage with these issues on a deeper level.
Exactly. And with that in mind, let's move on to the final part of our deep dive and talk about some potential solutions to these challenges.
All right, so we've covered a ton of ground in this deep dive, from like political battles and corruption scandals to how Congress actually works or doesn't work, and that really scary potential debt crisis. Let's go back to that debt crisis for a minute, because it seems like that one could hit all of us pretty hard, no matter what our political views are.
You're so right. This isn't about Democrats versus Republicans, and the sources we've been looking at, they really paint a grim picture of what could happen if we don't get a handle on this debt situation. Remember those projections? The debt to GDP ratio could hit like 132 to 148% by 2035. It's not sustainable.
Yeah, those numbers are definitely eye-opening. I remember reading that that much debt could really mess up the economy. What kind of impact are we talking about here?
Well, think of it like this. When a country has a ton of debt, it has to pay a lot of interest on that debt. And that means there's less money available for things like, you know, infrastructure or education or even research and development. It can even lead to higher interest rates for regular people, so it becomes more expensive to buy a house or a car or even just use a credit card. And like, in a worst case scenario, the government might not even be able to pay its bills. That's a sovereign debt crisis.
That sounds like a complete disaster. One of the articles really dug into this idea of like fake math in Washington budgeting. It's basically when politicians use overly optimistic economic forecasts to justify their policies, especially tax cuts.
It happens all the time, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians love to promise that their policies will pay for themselves through economic growth. But we've seen time and time again that those projections are usually way too crazy. Reality has a way of biting back.
So they're basically just passing the buck and crossing their fingers, hoping for the best.
Pretty much. But the problem is that the longer we wait to deal with this debt problem, the worse it gets and the harder it'll be to fix.
So what can we do? Is there any way to get a grip on this debt crisis? The articles did mention some potential solutions.
There are some ideas out there. One is to really embrace new technologies like AI. The thinking is that AI could boost productivity and help the economy grow faster, which would lead to more tax revenue. Another idea is to focus on attracting skilled immigrants who could contribute to our workforce and help drive innovation.
Those sound like good ideas, but I'm sure there are challenges too, right?
Absolutely. Like with AI, some people are worried about jobs being lost to automation. And we have to make sure that the benefits of AI are shared by everyone, not just a select few. And with immigration, there are always those debates about how to strike a balance between our economic needs and security concerns and the impact on social services.
So it seems like any solution is going to involve some really tough decisions and trade-offs.
Yeah, that's just the reality of complex problems. Yeah. There are rarely easy answers.
The articles also talked about cutting down on wasteful government spending. I remember Congressman Schweikert argued that streamlining government processes and getting rid of unnecessary programs could save a ton of money.
He was particularly focused on the issue of, like, unnecessary or duplicative medical procedures. Imagine how much money could be saved if we could reduce those.
It's crazy to think about how much waste there probably is, but I bet those kinds of reforms would be really unpopular with certain groups, especially those who benefit from the current system.
Oh, for sure. Those special interest groups would fight tooth and nail to protect their turf. Making those changes would require some really strong leadership, the political will to do it, and a willingness to make unpopular choices. But in the end, it comes down to priorities. Do we want to keep kicking this can down the road and burden future generations with a mountain of debt? Or do we want to make those tough decisions now to create a more stable and prosperous future? It's a question we all have to grapple with.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into politics, economics, and the looming debt crisis, what's the one thing you really want our listeners to take away from all of this?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember is that all these issues are connected. The decisions we make today, whether it's about time zones, people moving between states, voter ID laws, or how we manage our national debt, they all have consequences down the line. We need to think beyond just our own immediate interests and really consider how our choices will impact the future.
It all goes back to that idea of critical thinking we talked about earlier. We can't just passively accept everything we hear. We have to be active, engaged citizens, asking tough questions and forming our own conclusions if we want to build a better future.
I couldn't agree more. That's what these deep dives are all about. Empowering you to think critically, challenge assumptions, and become an active participant in shaping the world around you.
So here's a final thought for everyone listening. What can you do in your own life to make a difference on these issues? Whether it's advocating for policies you believe in, supporting organizations working on the ground, or just having these conversations with your friends and family, every little bit counts. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay informed, and keep exploring.